Hello, I'm Alma Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and the proud mother of four children, one of whom has Prader-Willi syndrome.
And I am Iris Miller. I'm a certified rehabilitation counselor and the proud mother of two children, one of whom has quadriplegic cerebral palsy and is nonverbal.
In this podcast, we discuss the uncensored truth about raising children with disabilities.
Prepare to laugh, cry, and hopefully learn something new.
This is Two Moms, No Fluff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Two Moms, No Fluff, the podcast in which we discuss the uncensored truth about raising children with disabilities. I am Iris Miller, and I'm here with my partner, Alma Schneider, who would introduce our guest for today.
Great. Thank you, Iris. Lovely to see you. And I'm very excited because we had the pleasure of having our guest come to our weekly support group in Montclair, New Jersey. She is an educational advocate, and her name is Leanne Lampone. And we are going to have you, Leanne, tell us a little bit about who you are.
Hi, I'm Leanne Waldron Lampone, and I'm an educational advocate. My history is that I worked in New York City in the hauling business, analyzing contracts, looking at data. Are they profitable? Are those contracts profitable, and how can we make them profitable? So you can imagine when somebody came to me with some information they had regarding their child and academic struggles and kind of the hoops and all the roadblocks they were getting, they asked me to look at the information, and I did. And I became a little concerned, interested, confused, understanding how to analyze data and manipulate data. I saw a lot of that going on. And but I knew that I needed to know more. I needed to know about the federal, the state, and the local laws. And so I started going to school for it. And one thing led to another. And it, I got my degree as a gen ed teacher, a special ed teacher, a learning disability teacher consultant, and a supervisor. And you can imagine my husband when I said I was leaving my job. And he said, wait a minute, you're doing great. Like, are you sure? And I said, yeah, I'm sure there's something here. And it's just been a great ride, and it's been interesting. And it's been, many nights with the head on the pillow, kind of shaking my head, going, I don't know how some people are sleeping, but, you can't shut it off, mm-hmm. right? If your head, if your head and your heart is in the right place, it's personal.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to be a family member.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about children who can't fight for themselves. They're just part of the process. And parents, they're doing all different things for a living, right? They're doing, and they don't know all the laws, and they're trusting that schools are taking great care of their kids, and many are. Some aren't.
Yeah. Leanne,
and that's where I come in.
Leanne, can you maybe explain a little bit, because we have parents listening to the podcast that have children in a variety of ages. Can you explain a little bit, what does an educational advocate consultant does for the families, for the students, for parents who are not familiar with the term or the role?
Mm-hmm. Well, I happen to be a licensed educator, right? So I hold many different licenses. So I know what I'm looking at. I know from working in the schools what these documents mean, what that information really says. And as such, I also know the laws, right? I know the federal, state, and local laws and policies and procedures that are in place. Parents don't have the time for that. They just don't. It's just very simple, and it's personal. It's really close. And all they know is help my child. And they know they're sending their child to a school, a safe environment with kind people, with intentions of doing the right thing. However, I always say the data will set you free, and follow the money. they're going to tell you it's not a business. If you have a budget, it's a business. And that's the bottom line. You can dress it up. You can do all that you want to do to manipulate that. The data will set you free and follow the money. And as long as you know what it is that you want for your child, that you truly believe will help your child be successful, we can work with that. And now we also have to go, it's free and appropriate. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a nice, good, sensible vehicle. You are not getting the Lamborghini. We all want the Lamborghini. Heck, I'll take it. But that's not how it works. It's free and appropriate to meet your child's educational needs.
Okay. All right, great. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're very driven with this, you know, from our meeting with you also in person, we realize how, you know, you take this very seriously, and we appreciate mm-hmm. that in an educational advocate to make sure that the drive is there and that you're on our side. And we have parents who have given us some questions for you. Mm-hmm. So, and it's funny because these questions are very, they're specific, but they're also generic, because mm-hmm. a lot of parents have very similar issues, which is also what makes it so frustrating mm-hmm. when we know that the school district has dealt with these issues before, but every year the same issues keep coming up and sure. need to address these. So
that's the name of the game.
The name of the game. So we all have to be in contact all the time. And that's why these groups that, you know, we're running are so important, because parents get to talk in these groups and they learn mm-hmm. from each other and mm-hmm. learn, oh, that's an issue that that has already been brought up to the district and it didn't change. And now my child's in the same boat. So
yep.
I'm going to read you the first question, and hopefully you can give us some ways to deal with the issue. Question number one, is it legal for a family to choose which class their child is in, even when the district says only one class is available because of limited staffing? What do you say to that, Leanne?
First of all, they are to provide you with what your child needs within the parameters, right? So, you know, the data that is collected drives the program and how your child's going to receive instruction and where. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, you know, schools aren't in the business of listening to Mrs. Jones say, well, I want my child in XYZ class. I'm the parent and I know. That may be true. But what does the data say? Because it's not personal. It's business.
You know, I'm going to interrupt for 1 second, because you went out for 1 second. We are going to have to go back to that. Can you repeat what you just said? Schools are not in the business of what? Or said a sentence, but you went out for a second. Schools are in the business of.
They're in the business of providing education for your child. Mm-hmm. However, you know, because mom and dad say, you know, we know our child best.
Mm-hmm.
That may be true. You do. You're the mm-hmm. parent. But the data will set you free. You have to have the data to support the decision-making. If you don't have the data, you know, you don't have anything to stand on. It's not, I feel, I think. Certainly, you wouldn't go to a surgeon without having tests done, right? Mm-hmm. And then, could you imagine walking in and he goes, you know what? I think you need surgery. I'm not going to run tests. Let's just do it. No, that's not what we do. The data will set you free. They're going to test your child formally, and they're going to do standardized testing, and then they're going to do functional testing. And depending on the results of the testing, they may need to administer additional testing. They may need to send your child for medical, or there's many different things, psychological, there's many different, components to the data collection. Okay. But for a school to say they don't have the staff or the program, well, they need to find the program.
Okay.
You know, and most districts want to keep things in-house. And I understand that for LRE, you know, you want children around, you know, children that are not classified, right?
LRE.
Mm-hmm.
What's that? What's LRE?
Least restrictive environment. Okay. So, you know, it's good for the districts to want to keep things in-house,
mm-hmm.
and to have students be learning in the least restrictive environment, and to be around other students that are not classified, general education students. This is mm-hmm. very important. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that there's significantly severe students that need to go out of district, and mm-hmm. there is a place for that. However, if it is a program that they have in district and it just happens to be full, yes. and they don't have room for your child, and we've determined that that child needs to remain in district and they need this program, then they have to come up with a way to meet your child's needs, whether it's opening up another classroom. Maybe there's more than, maybe they have the program in a different school in the same district. Maybe they have a relationship with another district where they can put your child in that district. There's a lot of different ways. You don't change, yeah. what the recommendation is based on what they have. You know, it's like, if you're a size 8, let's jam your foot into a size 7 or a 9. That's not how this works.
You know, tried that. It really
doesn't work.
But I like the shoes enough.
yeah. But you truly, and most districts, again, it is to their advantage and yeah. it is to the student's advantage to keep them in district.
Yeah.
However, there are cases, and they are significant cases, and it is not taken lightly.
Mm-hmm.
When you put a child out of district, you're putting him in the most restrictive environment. And that poses challenges as well. Mm-hmm. And so you weigh out those challenges, right? The cost benefit of it for the student learning. But districts don't do it lightly.
But what you're saying, so I just want to clarify for our listeners, if there is a school where the child has been, and they want to switch classes, or they want to, there's nothing available in the class where they are, but there is another class in the school.
So if the child's in one class mm-hmm. and the parent believes they should be in another class.
Yes.
Okay. That needs to be based on data. That okay. needs to be based on, if I were the case manager, if I was the advocate, I would say, okay, I hear what you're saying. Why do you want that? Okay. What's the data show?
So what, if someone says, "No, for social reasons, I need to be in that class," and they can prove why that's important, then they would have to put supports in a class that does not have supports in.
Well, first of all, you're not, most classrooms today have all kinds of supports. It's what kind of supports are being provided, right? So there's a lot of students with shared aids, with you know, personal aids. There's a lot going on in the classrooms, with specialists coming in, kids being pulled out. So that's not normally an issue. But just changing based on what the parent is saying is not a decision-making factor. You come to the team with the information of why this needs to happen. And then they're going to verify that, whether it's through observation, testing. There's many different ways to determine if this is valid. Sometimes districts will say, we'll give it a trial,
mm-hmm.
okay? And they need to consent to try it because they're breaking the program, right? They're making a change to the IEP. So they need to take consent, and then they can try the student in the class.
Mm-hmm.
They can do that. It's been my experience that they don't really want to do that because you have the honeymoon phase, right?
Yes.
So the first week or so, everything's, you know, great. Now, 2 months in, it looks a little different. Now, what do you do?
Right.
So really the decision-making needs to be on data, and it has to be by the team.
Okay.
And if they say we don't have room, that's not part of the decision making.
Okay.
It's what is best for that student.
Okay. So that's the legal entitlement. All right. Iris, you're up.
I actually, Leanne, I wanted to ask you a question from one of the parents that really connects well to what you spoke about so far. So here's the question. We have been told that our son is not ready for a mainstream class. He's currently in a self-contained class. I'm wondering if I can fight this and have an aide accompany him. Like, is this a possibility? What's your opinion about that?
Well, if they're in a self-contained class, right, that's a restrictive environment, okay? Again, that's not taken lightly, that decision-making to put a student in a self-contained room, okay? There's reasons, there's data to support it, because if the district gets called to the carpet, and they do, they have people that come and analyze, the IEPs, and they do spot checks and whatnot, you best have that information, and it better be correct, mm-hmm. right? Because you don't want to have to explain and really get on a corrective act. There's many things that they can do. So if you feel that your child should be mainstreamed, I would have a meeting. First of all, every communication is via email. They're not your friends, okay? They're lovely people. It's a business. The data will set you free. Part of that data is email. Okay, Mrs. Smith calling you up and oh, I know and I understand and I hear you means nothing. It's fluff. Okay, but it's fluff. Okay, in an email, the reasons why, and then request a meeting, and then the team comes together to determine the data that will support making that change. It is not based on what mom thinks. Okay.
Sorry.
Unless they want to revoke consent and take their child out of special ed, which is probably not a good thing to do if they're in a self-contained room. But I would have to look at all the information to really make that statement.
I'm sorry, I'm interrupting you halfway through answering my question. But with regards to those meetings, is it possible for a parent to record what was said in a meeting? Because many times, as you said about emails, you need that paper trail to show the things that really happened with regards to your child. When you come to a meeting with a variety of professionals and things are being said, but the parent later on doesn't have any proof that a promise was made, how do you recommend they deal with that? And are they allowed to record meetings?
Okay, well, let's start at the top. I tell all of my clients, data will set you free, mantra, okay? Invitation, who's attending the meeting? Okay, you're gonna send an email. I would like a meeting. And the reason I want this meeting is XYZ, right? They're gonna send you an invitation to the meeting, okay? And it's gonna list the date and the time, the start time and the end time, and the participants of the meeting and what their role is, okay? On the bottom of that, it's standard. Some forms may be a little different. There's a section that says, and you click off, I will be recording the meeting. You absolutely, in my opinion, and certainly people can do what they want, email, record everything. They're not your friends. It's business. Your position is to do the best that you can for your child. And you need to understand that you need that evidence. And you absolutely can record every meeting. I record my phone calls. I start off with, hi, it's great to hear from you. Just so you know, I'm recording this conversation. And then I send a follow-up email. Just to be clear, on such and such a date at such and such a time, we discussed, here's attached a copy of the recording. Okay. People change what they say when they know they're being recorded. Okay. And you can believe that a district, if you check off, I'm recording, they're sending an administrator, a supervisor, a director, they're sending somebody.
And I just want to make sure that we address this, that people need to know, the district does need to know the date, 24 hours, I believe, before. Is it 24, 48 hours?
It's not 24. They have to give you 10 days notice for a meeting, right? Okay. You get that meeting on Monday, you send it back on Monday, you click off that you're recording. You want to let them know and you want to give them the time to prepare, because what's going to happen? They're going to say, you know, you only gave us 24 hours notice. We can't get an administrator here. Oh, she's sick. You can believe when you click off, I'm going to be recording. They're going right to their supervisor and they're saying, see attached. And that supervisor or that director or that superintendent or whomever it may be is going to say, Mrs. So-and-so supervisor needs to be there. And if she's out sick, the backup plan is for so-and-so to go. Okay. They're prepared because they're prepared, and you have to be respectful of their time as well. You know,
so the time frame is as soon as you get the email.
As soon as you get that invitation,
okay,
you click it off and you send it back.
And if there's no invitation to record, you say, I will be recording. You respond and then, yes, that time works for me. I will be recording the meeting.
Yes. Okay. I often say, because case managers are so busy, and they are, and, you know, my heart does go out to them to a point, you know, when we're looking at 60 to 90 caseloads, some of them are over that. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, they're churning and burning. They're looking at this paperwork and something may be, you know, missed. So I tell people, read the invitation, understand exactly who is attending it. Because guess what? Not just because they put it on the invitation doesn't mean you have to agree that that person is attending, right? If you don't have a good relationship with whomever, or you don't know so-and-so, or whatever the story may be, you are in your rights to say, I do not agree for Mrs. Smith to attend this meeting, and this is the reason why. Okay. And send that out. And then I always tell them, follow up with an email. Same day, just like you would anything else. You know, it's kind of belt and suspenders, right? Because they got that invitation. Maybe they didn't scroll all the way to the bottom and saw that you clicked off to record, but okay, they're going to see the email where you say, Dear Mrs. Smith, thank you for the invitation that you sent to me today, where you stated so-and-so, you know, these participants, the date and the time. And again, just to be clear, I will be recording the meeting and I'm looking for an agenda for this meeting.
Okay. All right.
Super important to have an agenda, because how many times, and I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir on this, you get into the meeting and everybody's talking over everyone and it's mayhem all over. Oh, the hour's over. Bye.
Yeah.
And you've accomplished nothing. So yeah, to have an agenda, bullet point, what you're looking to do and who you need to talk to about it. Right.
Okay.
You know, and you may say, you know, I need the music teacher there as well, mm-hmm, or I may need the gym teacher,
which is what's leading us to our next question, which I mm-hmm am very interested in, about the para attending the meeting. Mm-hmm. The next question is, my child is very connected to her para and doesn't deal well with transition. They told me that the para is part of the classroom she is in, but I would like the parent to follow her, my daughter, when she moves to different classes, moving up, that is, to the future grades. Is this possible to have the para move with the child through the school?
Anything is possible, but is it realistic? No, not. And interestingly, I was just in a meeting yesterday that we spoke about this, where I told the parent, they're going to tell you that they want the different paras to engage with your child so that they don't grow attached, mm-hmm, and that things are able to be socialized, right? Sounds good. And it's realistic, but it depends on your child, right? Mm-hmm. It's not what individual education plan. Now understand, they can also pull those paras. Let's say they need to pull para A because they have a child that has behavior issues in the next room and they're para is out and there's a substitute in there, but they know your para is a really strong one in that other room. They're going to pull that para over there quite possibly. And mm-hmm, so, you know, it affords them a lot of flexibility.
Yes.
And okay, I'm not in the business of offering flexibility to the district. You know, it's the big chess board. Okay. For them, that I have so many, you know, on this chessboard, and where do I need to put them today? And what do I need to do? And how do I make this work? Because let's face it, the principal is running a school and the principals get evaluated and they don't want things hitting the fan. They don't They just don't. And I get that. It's self-preservation. However, we're concerned about your child. So that chessboard game is now switched, right? So I hit the buzzer and now it's on my side, okay? The bottom line is, if your child has a significant reason why they need that assigned person, prove it. Prove it.
So you've been moving up the grades. If you had this
I had a student on my caseload where she had a significant medical issue, and the para had, you know, they had a great rapport, and the para not providing medical, but understood the nuances of this student and the needs and who to contact, and, you know, a lot of information. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we don't live in a perfect world. The woman's absent one day, they're going to get a sub, and that's fine and whatever. But, you know, we were able to prove that this para needed to stay with this student for these reasons, and they moved on up. Now, happened to be a very good para. Okay.
And everybody wanted this para.
Everybody wanted that para. So, you know, other parents would make it very difficult. You know, you gave it to this one, why not mine? And so, again, be cautious. They're your friends on the playground and they're whatnot of whatever. But remember, all the information you share isn't benefiting you. It's benefiting them. And so if you want to put yourself in jeopardy of whatever, go ahead and talk. But I tend to keep
blabbing to everybody that you have the best parent in town,
because that person is going to be transitioning all the way through.
Isn't that a shame that like pits the parents against each other? You know, because everybody wants the same thing for their child. They want the best parent. How about all the paras? You know, can be as good as the next one. Unfortunately, that's not the case, and it should be.
And it's also perception, right? Yeah. So, you know, mom may have one idea and the teacher may have another idea. And then realistically what the team is saying is something totally different, somewhere in the middle. Can they do it? Yes, they can do it. But you're going to have a lot of data to support that. Okay. And in my professional opinion, unless it's something that is so significant.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, really.
Yeah.
It's not a good idea. It's, in my opinion, you know, you do want them to be able to socialize and to engage with a lot of different people. Mm-hmm. Some students can do that. Some students are a work in progress. Some students may, unfortunately, not have that. Yeah, right. So, you know, but the districts are going to hold the line, because soon as they hear that, you know, other parents learned about it, they're in a tricky spot because they can't share the information. Why?
Right, right.
And so it sometimes becomes combative. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it becomes, they get an advocate or they get an attorney, or sometimes the parents just talk so much, they make things miserable for the teacher. You know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on. So
you got to choose
your battles, and you got to be smart about what you're sharing with your friends.
Right. All right.
Leanne, thank you. We did have another question, but I think that you, by answering the questions before, you already kind of answered that. So I wanted to ask you something different. And I want to tell you that my kids do not attend school. As I'm listening to you explaining all of that, it sounds to me like having some sort of a conflict with the school is almost inevitable during the duration of years that our children with special needs and disabilities attend school. So I wanted, maybe before we close the episode for today, if you can give parents some recommendation on how to better be prepared for a time that may be a conflict about the child's placement, the decision-making about the educational plan don't go as planned. What can parents do to prepare themselves so they're if there is a hurdle, they're able to maybe pass it easily and not require maybe your help, which seems to me like very needed for so many families.
I would say that choose your words wisely. Don't be combative. Be matter of fact. Short, sweet, to the point. Don't over communicate. And understand who you're communicating with and where that information could potentially go. You have to be smart, and you don't have to come in guns a-blazing. When you have federal, state, and local laws and guidelines, they have to be followed. And if they're not being followed, then you file a complaint. It's very simple. And I think you do get more with honey than you do with vinegar, but you also have to let them know that you understand what the laws are. And again, record everything. Let them know. Don't do it, you know, don't be sneaky about it, because then you can't use it. And then it also creates not a great environment, right? But follow up emails. And let me tell you, teachers are, I believe they're there for the right reasons in my heart. And they're going to pick up the phone and they're going to say XYZ to you. And they're going to be looking for information and sharing information and whatnot. Follow it up with an email. Thank you for calling me. Mm-hmm. And really be respectful of your teachers, because they're in the top spot.
Yeah.
They have all these kids. They have all these parents. They have the school administrators. They have the child study team. And then they have the federal, state, and local laws and governing bodies. Not so easy. It's a lot on their plate. So, yeah. You know, you do have to pick your battles and watch your tone, but collect your data just in case you need it in your pocket.
It sounds like we all have to be very, very calm lawyers going in there. That's what this sounds like to me. You need to just be a very calm lawyer.
Very calm, and understand that sometimes they very much agree with you. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to figure out, with all these laws in place, how they can make it happen. Listen, they don't want a kid in the school turning it upside down, and they don't want a child not getting their needs met. So sometimes there's outside things going on that aren't, you know, not so great. And they have to say to you, I hear you. I appreciate it. I understand. We're going to try to figure this out. Understand, this is what the laws are. Mm-hmm. We're trying to work within the law. Yeah. And, you know, they're trying to kind of do that dance. And that's, yeah, but you're not going to get them to do that if you're coming at them, hitting them right, you know, in the head.
It's true. I think that, you know, it's very easy for parents and guardians to get riled up, because repeatedly being in a situation where you're being told no, or you know that it's not in the best interest of your child, you know, we're all mama and daddy bears in the end of this when we're trying to take care of our kids. So it's very hard not to get emotional, not to get angry. And it's really important for not just us to know how to deal, but for the people in the district to know how to deal with us. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, with everything that Iris and I do. We're trying to alert, you know, the masses to what it's like on the other side. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's a lot of emotion in there, and a lot of pain, and a lot of frustration on the part of the family. So if we all could come together, this would be a perfect world in the educational system. But when it doesn't go that way, that's when the Leanne Lampones of the world need to come in. So this has been really helpful. This is a lot of really great, useful information. So thank you so much for sharing and taking some time today.
Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it. Yes, I truly do appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I appreciate the work you guys are doing. And I have to say, over and over, impressed. You guys really, you're great at what you do. And I'm appreciative of that. I really am. You're doing an important job and important work.
Thank you.
Julian, Leanne, I want to invite people who have listened to this episode to write to us at info@2momsnofluff if you have any questions or need more information from Leanne. And I really appreciate your time today. Thank you for sharing the information for our audience, the people that just joined us today for the very first time and are a very loyal audience that has been with us for a couple of years. We appreciate the fact that you're still here listening in. Please rate our podcast, give us a 5-star rating so other people can find us and listen in and learn something new.
For more information, please go to www.2momsnofluff.com. Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please subscribe and give it a 5-star rating so more people can hear it. Thank you.